This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 20th of January 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 20th of January, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Just before we start on the headlines, I will again, as we have done previously, apologise for a slight buzzing noise which will come across your recording, which is the computer fan, which we'll try and resolve next week. OK, the main headlines this week: fears for future of 1,000-year-old mill, Caroline is the new council leader, and demands for action in tackling pollution. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was fears for future of 1,000-year-old mill at risk. One of Winchester's most historic buildings is under serious threat, the Chronicle can reveal. Winchester City Mill is the oldest working water mill in Britain and dates back more than 1,000 years. However, its owners say its future is in jeopardy because of serious flood damage. Although the damage to the basement occurred during the heavy floods of 2014, it was only 6 months later that the true extent of the problem was discovered. Now a campaign is underway to save it from closure, and the National Trust, which owns the building, says it needs £125,000 by June to secure its immediate future as a visitor attraction and working mill. Serious structural problems were revealed by inspections in late 2014, including severe deterioration of the beams and joists. Emergency propping has now been installed to support the structure. The manager at City Mill, Rick Weeks, 34, from Alsford, said the flooding came as the attraction had been enjoying a surge in visitors. Since the machinery was restored in 2004 and it became a working flour mill again, the number of visitors has grown from 17,000 people a year to more than 40,000. However, Mr. Weeks warned if the campaign failed, then there was a real risk of closure. He said, "I was the manager when the flood happened. Most of the damage was visual. This came as a massive surprise and shock afterwards, as it was not apparent until 6 months later how bad it actually was. There have been a whole series of surveys that have now given us the results to know what we are dealing with and come up with a price to fix it. If we do not meet the target, there is a risk we'll have to close the property until funding can be found within the region, and that's why we're having the fundraising campaign to keep the property open to the public and for the public to be involved in it. It is a very real risk, and it would be a loss to Winchester if it were to close," said Mr. Weeks. "I think this is an opportunity for people to really help save a unique Winchester attraction and to ensure its future for future generations to enjoy." Winchester City Mill has stood in the heart of the historic city since Saxon times. With a history of more than 1,000 years, the mill is probably the oldest working water mill in the country. The earliest references to the mill are in 932. It is a rare surviving example of an urban working corn mill. It was rebuilt in 1744 and remained in use until the early 20th century. It came to the National Trust in the 1920s. After extensive repairs, the Trust leased the building to the Youth Hostel Association in 1931, a lease which continued until 2005. The YHA Youth Hostel Association lease was not renewed, and the mill was restored to full working order in 2004. Now the flour it produces is sold in its shop and used by many local businesses. The flour is also bought by many of the mill's visitors every year. Wildlife at the mill. Wildlife is a key element of the mill's attraction. In 1994, three otters were reintroduced to the River Itchen. Since then, they have thrived, with regular sightings nearby. In the late 1990s, a joint project between the National Trust and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust was set up to install observation equipment. The otters' regular adventures are captured by a series of motion-activated cameras as they emerge from under the mill. Visitors can enjoy clips from regularly updated archive footage and view the live feed from our cameras along the river. The crystal clear waters of the river Itchen teem with trout, and even occasionally salmon. Water voles are regularly spotted, kingfishers fizz off the walls outside, and a family of grey wagtails feed on abundant mayfly and other insects in the garden. And there's some beautiful photographs of the old mill with the water surging underneath it, and an otter in the water, all whiskery, looking for those poor trout, and the picture of the actual flooding of the mill, which is quite dramatic.
Hurrell to lead in Winchester. A new leader has been elected at Winchester City Council, following the departure of Stephen Godfrey last month. Caroline Hurrell was elected at Council last Wednesday. She was previously the portfolio holder for housing services. Councillor Hurrell will be the sixth Conservative leader of the City Council in 6 years, and opponents expressed their disappointment that the Cabinet has remained the same. However, since that meeting there have been changes, with James Burns telling the Chronicle that he was no longer the portfolio holder overseeing transport. As such, he was at the forefront of the controversy over parking charges and new car parks in the city centre. Councillor Burns told the Chronicle that Caroline felt she did not feel that she could depend on my loyalty. It was unclear exactly what he meant, but he was a strong supporter of Councillor Godfrey and said he would be replaced by Jan Warwick. The Conservative group have riven by the Silver Hill scheme, with Tory Councillor Kim Gottlieb scuppering the scheme after suing his own council. The new portfolio holders were due to be revealed at Cabinet, as the Chronicle was going to press yesterday. The Liberal Democratic Group leader in Winchester, Lucille Thompson, described the Conservative Cabinet as being a pension pan for failed leaders. Before being elected last Wednesday, Councillor Hurrell had to contend with a council vote where Lucille Thompson was made to play for the role. However, Councillor Hurrell was voted in with 23 votes for her and 19 for Councillor Thompson. Setting out her vision, she said the concept of community is fundamental to how members serve Winchester, and councillors should always ask themselves if what they recommend is the right thing for residents. She spoke of the financial challenge the authorities faces, with government grants drying up. Councillor Hurrell promised her approach will be inclusive and collaborative. She said, "I want to be clear, honest and timely. Some may see change as risky, but it does give us an opportunity to reassess and refocus. I hope my appointment gives us the chance to do things differently and see different outcomes." After being elected, she thanked Councillor Godfrey for his work as leader. Councillor Hurrell will have a number of challenges to deal with when starting the busy role. She will be working with new chief executive at the Winchester City Council, Laura Taylor, who replaced Simon Eden. The new leader will also aim to carry out the new council strategy, where Winchester City Council is transforming the authority into an entrepreneurial council. A number of issues could also make and break Councillor Hurrell, with the scheme for the station approach area, which collapsed last year, back on the cards. There is also a supplementary planning document being created for future regeneration of Silver Hill, and it is hoped that the building of the new leisure centre at Bar End will start this year. As reported, Councillor Godfrey said he felt that it was the right time to leave the role after 17 months at the helm. And there is two pictures of Councillor Hurrell. In both, she is smiling.
And final headline, demands for action in tackling pollution. Opposition groups and climate campaigners in Winchester say that more should be done to tackle city centre pollution. The city has a chronic problem, amongst the worst in Hampshire, and an air quality action plan was discussed at the council. Figures from Public Health England showed that poor air quality contributed to the deaths of some 51 residents. If pollution is not reduced, the City Council could be fined by the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA. The final plan will be looked at by councillors in March before going to DEFRA. Parts of Winchester regularly go over emission levels. Problem spots include St George's Street, Chesil Street and parts of Romsey Road. Measures to reduce emissions include a parking strategy to boost park and ride, reviewing and enforcing goods deliveries by time of day, and an additional northern park and ride site. Other policies include council vehicles that enter the city centre meeting standards for low emission vehicles, and also ensuring heavy vehicles meet the Office of Low Emissions Standards. Councillor Frank Pearson, whose picture is inserted in this article, portfolio holder for environment, health and well-being, said that the council is committed to tackling pollution. He said, "Air quality is really an issue that exercises all of us. Everyone should be aware in this chamber we have an air quality issue, and there is a desire that everyone follows through on that." However, Liberal Democrats called for an amendment in council strategy on air quality, that it be considered in part of every council plan and strategy. Councillor Kelsey Lerney said, "Poor air quality not only kills, but it is also linked to dementia. Improving air quality not only has to be a priority, but a top priority. Whether other areas are worse is neither here nor there. Our priority has to be to our residents." Councillor Martin Todd said that the amendment would drive progress. He pointed to the fact that air quality was not even mentioned in the brief and the discussions about the previously collapsed station approach scheme. However, Councillor Pearson claimed the amendment was a political thing and described it as unnecessary. After the vote, which was 23 against the amendment and 19 for, leader of the Liberal Democrats in Winchester, Lucille Thompson, said, "We are extremely disappointed that our amendment was not carried forward. However, we do welcome the measures that have been approved." Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINACC, say they are pleased with the Air Quality Action Plan, but fear it may not be enough. Christine Holloway from WINACC said, "I absolutely agree that all council reports ought to consider the impact on air pollution and additional greenhouse gases." And there's a photograph of 9 vehicles creating air pollution in Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. So now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Bell Garum. So firstly, the death announcements for this week. Cherrett, Raymond Arthur Cherrett, who died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 7th of January, aged 90. Corner, Marjorie Corner, died peacefully on the 6th of January. Cowsill, Joyce Cowsill, died in hospital on the 13th of January, aged 83. Dolin, John Dolin, died peacefully on the 3rd of January. Dunford, Bernard John Dunford, died peacefully at home, aged 88. Geddy, Mimi Geddy, died peacefully on the 9th of January, aged 86. Hutchins, Jean Margaret Hutchins, died peacefully on the 11th of January, aged 94. Kiddle, Dr. Josephine Kiddle, died at home on the 10th of January, aged 92. Platt, Patricia Ann Platt, née Purcell Gilpin, died suddenly at home, aged 76. Reynolds, Primrose Reynolds, née Wilson, died on the 10th of January, aged 84. Richer, Jason Richer, died on the 9th of January, aged 46. Stratford, Mary Stratford, died peacefully at home on the 8th of January. And Witcher, Sue Witcher, died on the 10th of January, aged 70. Well, that concludes the death announcements, and now we move on to Christian comment, and that's going to be read by Albie. Thank you.
Yes, and Christian comment comes from the Reverend Paul Kennedy, Rector of East Winchester and priest in charge of St. Cross and Area Dean of Winchester, under the heading Change is an Insight into Nature of God. Anglicans tend to sing Henry Francis Light's Change and Decay in All Around I See, O Thou Who Changest Not, Abide with Me, with gusto. The hymn gives the warm feeling that change is to be avoided, and that God blesses stability. However, this is a week of great change. Theresa May has started revealing her wishes for the greatest modern political change to our country, our withdrawal from the European Union. Trump is being inaugurated as the 45th President of the United States. The distinctive Trump difference being the unique way he has repudiated so much of what went before him. Even the regular World Economic Forum meeting at Davos feels different, with China developing a global role and America's previous administration bowing out. 2017 will bring changes, not just with Brexit and Trump, but also potential radical political change across Europe. Change and decay? A classic philosophical view of God implies that God never changes and tends to bless stability. The classical view assumes that God is perfect and therefore incapable of change. To change God would have to become imperfect, as God cannot become more perfect. However, Christians worship God as revealed to the Hebrews, a God who is subject to change, and who reveals himself to a people in constant flux. Moses encounters God first in a burning bush, and while the bush does not change, the name of God is open to change and interpretation. The name for God, YHWH, can be translated as the stable I am who I am. However, as there is no future tense in ancient Hebrew, it can also be translated as the changeable I will be who I will be, or I shall be who I shall be. God's nature, revealed by God's name, is open to fluctuation and change. Abraham understood this when he bargained with God over the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. God can change God's mind. Change is a vital Christian insight into God's nature. God in Christ is born, grows and develops, is hungry, dies and rises. A life full of change. God the Father is changed from a transcendent authority to a grieving parent. Change and decay. Change and evolution may be a better understanding. What are the political changes being ushered in with 2017? Changes to the world order are not necessarily wrong. Some changes are clearly wrong, and some wrongs have been said. Any Christian who celebrates the dignity of humankind, believing that God took human form, should work against racism and stereotyping of religions. They should also look to dismantle barriers rather than erect them. However, recent elections have revealed barriers internal to our society and communities, with many people feeling excluded or marginalised. Hopefully, we can discern and support what is good in the changes of 2017. If the meeting at Davos can't understand the election of Trump, then it needs to perceive ways of making its global vision more locally inclusive.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, I think you got the first.
Emissions cost. Sir, this is from Bob Whitmarch of Berwick Avenue, Winchester. Emissions cost. Sir, regarding air pollution in Winchester, Andrew Beadle, Chronicle Letters, January the 5th, sensibly says that everyone wants the minimum possible pollution with a vibrant city centre. Unfortunately, emissions from internal combustion engines, as are found in cars and buses, come at a cost. They all emit the greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide, without doubt a major cause of climate change, and poisonous carbon monoxide. Petrol engines also emit nitrogen oxide gases, including nitrogen dioxide, NO2, which aggravates heart and lung disease. Diesel engines likewise emit NO2, but at least 4.5 times as much, and tiny soot particles which can get in dangerously deep inside lungs and even enter the bloodstream. Although diesel engines are more efficient than petrol engines in terms of miles per gallon, and hence are better for climate change and the pocket over long journeys, their more harmful impact on human health means that most diesel vehicles should be discouraged from entering densely populated cities. Malcolm Wright is wrong, Chronicle January the 5th, to blame buses for most of Winchester's pollution. A report written for the City Council in February 2016 calculated that cars and other vehicles deliver about four times more pollution in the form of NO2 in central Winchester than the buses. New Euro 6 buses are less polluting, largely because of EU directives that drive higher standards. Older diesel cars are worse. Clearly, Winchester needs to ensure that fewer and smaller cars enter the city centre so that it becomes a healthier place for all. Walking and cycling, which are cheap to enable and encourage and are non-polluting, must be a major part of the solution, as well as more frequent buses. Bob Whitmarch, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
And this one is from Angie Wilkinson. Cut consequences. Sir, the Chronicle of January the 12th, page 5, drew attention to the path devised to allow pedestrians access to the railway station. You reported that local councillors are seeking to improve this and complaining that once again pedestrians are being denied the priority and the consideration they deserve. This is excellent. But it is not only there that the convenience of walkers is being ignored, and in many cases councillors have the power to improve matters themselves. So-called Love Lane, the 100 yards throughway that allows access from Tegdown and neighbouring houses to the bottom of Chilboton Avenue, and thence via Stockbridge Road to the railway station and the city centre, is used by well over 100 pedestrians a day, including many children walking to and from the schools in Fulford. Yet this important pathway has been completely ignored this winter by those responsible for keeping our highways and byways in proper condition. No attempt has been made to clear the considerable leaffall. As a result, the leaves have gradually turned to mud, and it's been impossible for several weeks to use the path without getting dirty and wet. What's more, when the mud is finally washed away, it runs down to Westley Close and blocks the drain, contributing to the flooding that quite often affects that road. I know the councils are under pressure to make cuts, but to skimp on clearing this path causes considerable inconvenience and merely encourages people to use their cars more than they should. This is just one place where the exhortations to walk or cycle rather than go by car are not supported by the action on the ground. And that was from Angie Wilkinson, Westley Close, Week, Winchester.
Now a letter from John Cloyne, Fordington Road, Winchester, under the heading Wildlife Campaign. Sir, Khalid Aziz used his regular column last week as a tirade to berate Chris Packham and the BBC. Chris has campaigned against the illegal shooting of hen harriers and other birds of prey on grouse moors and for a ban on shooting snipe, woodcock and golden plover. All have declined dramatically in Hampshire. Unlike 50 years ago, there are now no snipe nesting in the Test and Itchen valleys, and winter numbers have declined. Breeding numbers of woodcock have halved in the last 25 years, and wintering inland golden plover numbers are in serious decline due largely to modern farming methods. Chris has a very valid point in campaigning for upholding the law on shooting birds of prey and for changes to the Wildlife and Countryside Act to include snipe, woodcock and golden plover as protected species throughout the year. He has promulgated his views in various places, including the BBC Wildlife magazine, as is criticised the BBC for bias in allowing Chris to give his opinions. For the information of your readers, the BBC Trust fully investigated the complaint against Chris and concluded he was a freelancer and not bound by rules against expressing opinions on public policy issues, and he was expressing his personal views. Accordingly, he had not undermined the BBC's reputation for impartiality. Aziz must have known this, and given his apparent concern about bias, one might have expected him to include this in his piece. I hope most of your readers are concerned about the relentless decline of much of our wildlife and cannot understand how, in this supposedly more enlightened age, individuals can find pleasure in killing wild creatures for fun, especially declining species. Clearly, Aziz has no problem with this. Fortunately, Chris is prepared to stand up and be counted on behalf of our declining wildlife and should be applauded. Indeed, I hope he might extend his campaign further by seeking a ban on killing for fun some declining species of wildfowl, such as pochard. In the interests of balance, why not invite Chris, a Hampshire resident and something of a national treasure, to write a response to Aziz's prejudices? And there's a note from the letter's editor. We have tried to speak to Mr. Packham, but with no success.
And this from Carol Geddes, Winchester, titled Homogenisation. Sir, the equilibrium between cafes, restaurants and shops in central Winchester certainly warrants the watchful eye of city leaders, Chronicle, January the 12th, but it is not the only balance to be struck. As Stuart Dunn states, our thriving cafe society plays an important role in supporting tourism. Yet how many peckish visitors stick to the main drag and Google restaurant names they already know? The true flavour and personality of a city comes from independent eateries, and it is incumbent on everyone living and working in Winchester to ensure that ours survive. Lose them, and we pave the way for a street scene as homogenised as the milk in our decaf skinny lattes. And there's a picture of the High Street, Winchester High Street, absolutely jam-packed with people, with the title underneath, Winchester High Street, Thriving or Dying, Glass Half Full or Half Empty. And that's from Carol Geddes, Stony Lane, Winchester.
Well, food seems to be very much on people's mind, because here is another letter from Adam Nicholas. Chains put independence at risk. Sir, Pret a Manger opens in the city, Chronicle, January the 12th. How surprising, yet another national cafe chain in the High Street. McDonald's owns a significant shareholding in this company. If people eat too much, it does not matter whether it's organic or not. This is obesity by stealth. It is proven that these cafes sell products which have fat and sugar content that goes right off the scale of what is healthy. And to make it right, Pret a Manger will give leftover food to homeless charities. It would be better to employ homeless people rather than giving them the rubbish their paying customers do not want. We have some real independent gems on the high streets. All this is being put at risk by another faceless corporate chain. And there's a picture of the new Pret a Manger store. And that is from Adam Nicholas, Painters Field, St Cross, Winchester.
A letter from Robert Marshall, Houghton, Stockbridge, under the heading Concrete Hants. Sir, weekly we seem to read of yet more development planned for Hampshire. Examples are 6,000 homes at Fareham, 10,000 around the New Forest, thousands around Basingstoke, plus myriad smaller developments in villages and on green fields. The numbers seem endless. What is the total number of houses being planned for Hampshire over the coming years? Where are these new residents coming from, and where will they work? Are factories and other employment sites being planned alongside these dwellings? Or will the residents of these estates have to travel to work, and how far? How will they get there? Are the authorities planning massive new mass transit systems, or will these people travel by car, creating more congestion and environmental damage? Are new roads planned to take the extra traffic? Where are the counter-arguments? Are there no bodies or organisations opposed to the urbanisation of the county? Is Hampshire to end up like Middlesex, which was concreted over in the 1920s to 30s?
And from S.B. Cook, Aldford, headed Scheme Interest. Sir, Roger Mallin's letter, chronicled December 29th, identifies a legitimate question about possible councillor interest in the Silver Hill development, which should have been asked some time ago. It specifically asks the question about Councillor Gottlieb, who so successfully masterminded the campaign to undermine and eventually kill off the Silver Hill development scheme. When I was a city councillor, it was always been a matter of surprise to me that there seemed to be no statements of personal or prejudicial interest made at the many council committee meetings about Silver Hill. Indeed, it was only after Private Eye reported on Councillor Gottlieb's involvement in the bidding for the £120 million Octopus Chiswick development that I became aware of his directorship of a major development company, London and Bath Estates. I had hoped that the independent report commissioned by the City Council, Claire Lloyd-Jones, would examine all the issues surrounding the Silver Hill development, including any personal or prejudicial conflicts of interest. Unfortunately, the report only made passing reference to the issue, possibly being influenced by the 103-page submission made by Councillor Gottlieb. Nonetheless, Claire Lloyd-Jones' report notes that the issues concerning Councillor Gottlieb's potential conflict of interest has been raised with me and needs to be investigated. As far as I'm aware, no such investigation has ever been carried out, unless this was part of the recent Standards Committee confidential discussions. And that's from S.B. Cook, Shepherdstown, Aldford.
And this is from Pete Haywood. Honesty? Honestly? Sir, I would characterise Steve Bryan's Ask the NHS event as bloodless and dispassionate. The panel, members of the Clinical Commissioning Group, CCG, spoke about outcomes, transformation and modernisation, familiar buzzwords of the boardroom. Richard Samuel, the Sustainability and Transformation Plan lead from the NHS Southern Eastern Hampshire CCG, believed perhaps the most telling quote of the evening. It's incredible that 98% of the NHS interactions are face-to-face while I can do all my banking online. Let that sit with you. This executive in charge of deliver transformation, which by his own admission is 550 million of the annual savings to Hampshire and the Isle of Wight NHS, compared essential healthcare services to online banking. Mr. Bryan seemed pleased at the close of the meeting, telling the assembled public that he has worked closely with Jeremy Hunt, the Health Secretary, who had been honest about money that the NHS is receiving, saying they asked for 8 billion and we have given them 10. This is not an honest remark. George Osborne promised 8 billion for the 5-year period from 2016 to 17 to 2020 to 21. In addition to 2 billion to allocated for 2015-16 in his autumn statement in 2014. The current Prime Minister and her MPs have since been claiming that the total 10 billion is being delivered over and above the original promise, which is utterly bogus. Simon Stevens has also said publicly that his blueprint for the NHS in 2014 said the health service may need up to 21 billion between then and 2020 and 8 billion only if vast improvements were made to public health and social care. Honesty about money? Hardly. And that was Peter Haywood, Winchester Constituency Labour Party, Greenhill Avenue, Winchester.
Now, another letter about pollution from Jonathan Greatrix of City Road, Winchester. Sir, pollution is a hot topic at present. How far behind the times are we? For many years, the taxis in Delhi run on LPG. So do the tuk-tuks in Bangkok. The long, bendy buses in beautiful Verona proudly tell you that they run on gas. Electric buses are being deployed in London and other cities. The geography of Winchester means change of power units in buses is vital here. The government rewarded everyone once upon a time for moving to diesel. Really? The lumps of soot that belch out were hardly rocket science in terms of harm, but the MPG was better and the fuel cheaper, so many went for it. Now the reverse is known, and we pay the price. The traffic does not flow in Winchester. St George's, Jury Streets ought to be double red lines. No stopping between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Shops and pubs will have to restock after hours. They manage at Gun Wharf. The traffic lights at various junctions, particularly Andover Road, need adjusting for better flow. Romsey Road from the Pit roundabout has 3 sets of traffic lights within close proximity, and none of them are synchronised to allow sensible flow. Why not? The number of buses has exploded in recent times, thanks to subsidies. Reduce the number and go for bendy buses that run on gas. They work in other cities. Why buses are allowed through the virtually pedestrianised areas around Salisbury is beyond me. They sit, one behind the other, killing slowly with their choking fumes and occasionally hitting someone or getting too close to keeping it HSE content. Oh yes, it's because folk are too lazy to move to a bus stop close by on the one-way system near Iceland, where a larger lay-by could be created for them to pick up. Barton Farm, Silver Hill, the police headquarters, Winchester Village, Abbots Barton, Fire Station, etc. are all vital and will all add traffic. I fill my car up for the 60p per litre on LPG. It makes perfect sense and is very green. It was Hampshire County Council's initiative that opened my eyes to it 12 years ago.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we move back in time for historical items. Nikki.
And this one's 100 years ago, January the 20th, 1917. Headed Dramatic Escape. Paris, January the 14th. The Havre correspondent of the Petit Journal telegraphs that 103 inhabitants of Liège, including a number of women and children, recently seized the tugboat Atlas V belonging to the Germans. and after making the crew intoxicated, left Liège at midnight and succeeded in escaping by way of the Meuse to Holland. The journey, which occupied an hour and three quarters, was made in safety despite the cables and other obstacles in the river. The pilot, who had taken the precaution of protecting the bridge, was fired on by German sentinels and machine guns were used against him. All on board, however, escaped without injury. And a second item, headed Workers Starved. Amsterdam, January the 14th. Reports from Belgium state that the Germans are sending back many deported Belgians because they are unfit to go on working under the present food conditions. After 3 months in Germany, the returning workmen come back almost dying, and indeed 70% of those who were sent back died shortly after their return. They tell terrible stories of hardship, exposure, and ill treatment. These accounts have been placed on record and sent to the American and Spanish legations at Brussels.
And 50 ago, January the 20th, 1967, farm disease spreads. As no more outbreaks of foot and mouth have been confirmed in Hampshire since Tuesday night, there were confident hopes yesterday, Friday, that the outbreak has been largely confined to the southeast of the county. The work of everybody concerned in the campaign to stop the disease spreading, veterinary officers, police, farmers and their workers, have often had the unpleasant task of helping to slaughter their own stock, met with praise from Jim Turner, chairman of the Hampshire NFU. Also, dog fouling. Sir, I would like to add my complaints regarding the foul pavements of Winchester. This afternoon I took my two small children for a walk round Oram's Arbour area, where we live. I had to scrape their feet clean at least three times on the walk, and when we returned home washed all our shoes and the wheels of the pushchair. Most of the time we walked in the road because it was cleaner. Would a strong campaign against allowing the numerous dogs in this area to roam free be at any use at all? I am proud of individual dogs and hope to introduce one to our household, which will be clean and under control.
And finally, 25 years ago, January the 17th, 1992, two items. Bobby's on the beat. A member of Hampshire Police Authority this week argued that they should ask for another £550,000 to pay for civilian staff in the police force to allow more officers to be available for community policing. The move by Liberal Democrat member Mr. Bill Alley was carried. The request now goes to the Policy and Resources Committee. The Chief Constable, Mr. John Hoddenott, judged that £550,000 could pay for an extra 40 civilian staff. The authority approved unanimously proposals for 67 more policemen and 7 civilians. This vote reflected the worry of councillors and magistrates about lack of police cover, particularly in rural areas. Mr. Alley commented, "We are 223 officers short. That's why the people of Bishop's Waltham say their calls for help go unanswered." And the second item under the heading, A Ruder Society. Nearing retirement after 37 years as MP for Eastleigh, Sir David Price says he finds in the House today less compromise, less compassion, less comradeship than when he arrived at Westminster in 1955. And he says he detests the increasing militancy in the practice of politics. "I find the rudeness, the demagoguery and the personal abuse offensive and unnecessary," he told fellow MPs in a piece written in the House magazine. He said they certainly had more career politicians than in 1955. The new type of member was more knowledgeable about the details of modern government. He or she was more professional, having worked in the media, academia, public relations, or advertising. But are they wiser?
And a final article on the historical side. County covered by snow in Big Freeze, and there's some pictures of the Big Freeze of January 1963 with children tobogganing down a snow-covered road, a couple of snow-covered roads with traffic stuck completely, very few people out and about, and only travelling on foot. Hampshire may have avoided the blizzards last week, but as our archives show, it was a very different story 54 years ago. Still full up with turkey, sprouts and mulled wine, the residents of Hampshire had to endure a cold snap of epic proportions. Boxing Day of 1962 saw a snowstorm which left the county under a blanket of brilliant white for more than a month. Across the country, more than 40 counties and 120,000 miles of roads were affected, with the south of England being the worst hit. Buses were either cancelled, rerouted, or at least 20 minutes late. Many had scratches and dents from hitting shelters or lampposts. The roads were chaotic for cars as well as they slithered slowly through the sludge. With hold-ups of over 3 hours reported, many people were forced to abandon their vehicles in nearby roads. And the Saints couldn't even play as the pitch at the Dell was frozen. And now, editorial comment, I think, please, Nikki.
Headed best of luck to our new council leader. Life is all about endings and beginnings, a staple of all newspapers. This week's Chronicle shows this in abundance. We wish Caroline Horrell the best of luck in becoming the sixth leader of Winchester City Council in only 6 years. The Chronicle has warned about the city getting close to becoming ungovernable, with the rising tide of sneering cynicism threatening any attempt to improve the city. So we hope that Councillor Horrell will have the skill to steer the authority away from those rocks that have consumed her predecessors. It would be remiss not to thank Stephen Godfrey for his service over the last 18 months in a thankless job, one to which he brought clear leadership and a sense of purpose. On a different tack, we can only hope that the abandoned horses dumped by disgraceful persons near Alsford Golf Club will find a suitable home and a happy ending. And a bit of our usual beat, we also report a local link to Donald Trump, soon, amazingly, to be sworn in as the 45th President of the United States of America. Whenever we may complain about democracy in this country, we can be grateful that no one so unsuitable for high office is ever likely to be elected here. Hopefully, we can agree that his term in office will also have a happy conclusion for all our sakes.
Thank you. Now we move on to first person, Norma.
This is A Scary Time for Everyone by George Hayter. I've got lots to worry about. My hair is falling out. Increasingly, I can't remember where I've just put something. And weeds are taking over the front lawn. But what I'm afraid of most is what's happening in the news. I fear for the future of the world. Instability is everywhere. Right-wing nationalism, fear of terrorist attacks, refugees on the march, Putin aggression. Nowhere is instability more prevalent than in the democracy that used to have none, the formerly rock-steady USA, with tomorrow's presidential inauguration of an embarrassing bully, we will see the world's most awesome nuclear button at the fingertip of the impulsive egotist who only reply to criticism is insult. Donald Trump has spoken fondly of protesters being beaten up. During the presidential election campaign, he warned that if he lost, he might not accept the result. He threatened to imprison his election opponent. He ridiculed a disabled person. He suggested that it might be a good idea for possession of nuclear weapons to spread to Japan. He has refused to reveal if he has paid any tax. He talks of making America great again. Yet his rants lower the status of the country, which for the time being at least is still envied around the world and still regarded as great. With a record like his, how can Trump be a defender of civilized values? Does he believe in in or even understand democracy. Has his the temperament to defend people weaker than himself? Because even he meets with approval from the American electorate, it is hard to see how a base person would have to be before judged unsuitable to lead a great nation. American voters baffle me. The majority appear to hate the idea of federal insurance to protect their health, yet they see salvation in federal intervention to protect their jobs. Many people in Hampshire probably share my disappointment at the number of our American cousins who accept Trump's wild promises at face value and obediently fall into line behind him. However outrageous or unpleasant his behaviour, they applaud. I believe his winning is a confidence trick honed in a life of wheeling and dealing. He makes pronouncements in convincing tones of certainty. His swagger persuades the impressionable that he is imparting to them a brilliant new perception. I fear that Trump policies will soon lead to dismay and possibly disaster. Adolf Hitler was another charismatic leader who made big promises and he went on to kill millions of innocent people. Of course, I'm not suggesting that Trump's presidency will lead to industrial murder, but the way that some angry or naive sections of American society appear prepared to follow Trump does remind me of Hitler's rise in the 1930s. When discontented people in particular band together to follow one man, history shows that trouble often follows. The danger of adulating Trump will increase if he has initial success. That would increase his hold over his followers, just as Hitler's popularity increased when his first 4 years in power saw German unemployment fall from 6 million to 1 million. A major cause of Trumpism is American disillusionment with the established politicians. In Britain, too many people despise the people in power. In fact, career politicians are in most respects ordinary people, but battered by a harsh and frustrating job, they have families and friends and consciences like the rest of us. Theresa slinked out of sight during the referendum so she could see which way the wind was blowing, but she seems capable and a good sort. The Winchester MP Steve Bryan may be a bit plodding and occasionally tactless, but I don't think he'd do the public much harm either. Our moderate politicians serve us well. I wish Mr. Trump was more like them.
Thank you, Bel Garum. I think we've got a couple of items.
Yes, there are. Bel Garum's alternative look at the news covers two items. The first, the Knights of the Village. The research by residents into their village's medieval history will be the subject of a talk in Winchester on the 26th of January. Members of the Barton Stacey Parish Local History Group will speak about into their delving which led to the Miniature Knight Project. The event at 1:15 p.m. at Hampshire Record Office is free and part of the History Group's last Thursday lecture series. The researchers investigated the knights who gave their name to the village, Rogo and Emery de Sacy. They discovered the charter for the award of the manor of Barton Stacey to Rogo de Sacy by King John in 1199 and traced the men's involvement in the Crusades and Emery's loyal service to the crown, which led to him becoming High Sheriff of Hampshire in 1239, where he was responsible for building the gate at Winchester Castle. The Barton Stacey Parish Local History Group chose to celebrate the anniversary and the De Saces by creating its own miniature knights as a centrepiece for 2 weeks of celebrations in the village. Its members engaged the whole village with different community groups decorating miniature hand-carved knights. The book club created the Sir Gruffalo Miniature Knight, and the Women's Institute produced a female knight called Lady Norma. Some of the knights are on display in the foyer of Hampshire Record Office until March 31st. An exhibition of the history of the De Saces and the research produced by the History Group are also on display. And there's a photograph, glorious photograph, of the Barton Stacey Knights lined up, about 15 or 16 of them, outside the village church last summer, and all painted in the beautiful colours, heraldry colours, that the knights wore in those days. And the second item, a facelift for bus station. Winchester bus station has a new look following a spruce up. A new sign is on display over the entrance off the Broadway opposite the Guildhall. The £2,130 sign was produced by local firm Mint Signs in collaboration with the City Council. Stagecoach's South's operation manager, Pete Robinson, said it was a spruce-up to make the place look a bit smarter, as previously some of the letters were falling off. The bus station had been expected to have been demolished for the Silver Hill scheme, but the redevelopment collapsed last year. The state of the bus station was a constant gripe by visitors and residents alike. Councillor Steve Miller, portfolio holder for estates and local economy, said, "The City Council has used advertising revenue from poster sites in its Guildhall buildings to fund this much-needed improvement. The large sign forms the gateway to the bus station. It is a landmark and is an important element in many visitors' first impression of our historic city." And there are two photographs, before and after. First, the Winchester bus station entrance, tatty, with the old sign. And the second, Winchester bus station entrance, spruced up, with the new sign.
Thank you. And now we move on to the announcements with What's On. And there are three items in Winchester Cathedral. I'll give you the contact details at the end. Saturday the 28th of January, 7:30 p.m, Hampshire Music Service New Year Concert. A celebration of Hampshire's best young musicians. And this is a standing concert. Chairs will be available if needed, because, of course, at the moment, during January, the nave of the cathedral is empty of all chairs so that you can see the cathedral in its glory. Tickets for that are £8 with £5 concessions. On Tuesday the 31st of January, 5:30 p.m, there's a cathedral open evening, and that's a chance to find out about how the cathedral departments work together. And if you just turn up, there will be people willing to help you and guide you through the evening. And on Saturday the 4th of February at 7 p.m, the Wayne Fleet Singers are holding a concert with proceeds in aid of the Mayor's charities. And tickets are between £7.50 and £12.50. So for all those, contact details are for the box office, 01962 857 275. That's Winchester 857 275. Lighting up time ends Friday the 20th of January at 7:57 a.m. and begins at 4:36 p.m. And on Wednesday the 25th of January, it ends at 7:52 a.m. and begins at 4:44 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you receive from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding, Winchester 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed, Abandoned Horse Dies. One of the horses dumped close to Alsford Golf Club has since died. As reported in the Chronicle, six horses have been running wild at Alsford Golf Club since last month. Now efforts have been stepped up to get the horses moved after concerns for their welfare. The horses had not been seen on the golf course since we broke the story last month and are currently in a field at Appledown close near... at Appledown close to the course. However, the club say they do not have the means to take responsibility for the horses. Under law, if a horse is abandoned on private land, the landowner must notify the police and horse owner. If the horse stays on the land for 4 days and the owner does not claim ownership in this time, the landowner can then choose to either sell, rehome or kill the horse. It is understood that the horses are currently on a field that is owned by Southern Water, close to its treatment plant. One worried resident, Jenna Shaw of Cheriton, fears that not enough is being done to help the horses, who could have serious medical issues. She said, "All I know is that a youngster has died. People suspect that it was worms. There has been whispers that there were two or three dodgy men looking at the one that died, but there's rumours that a charity might round them up." Another concerned resident, who asked not to be named, called on Southern Water to take responsibility for the horses. The Chronicle contacted Alsford Golf Club for an update. Club manager Steve Privett said, "I've not got a clue. I'm afraid I do not know what is happening with them." A spokesman for the Hampshire Police said that they did put police tape around the deceased horse to make people aware of it, but the responsibility lies with the landowner. Southern Water say they are trying to relocate the horses and are working closely with the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals and the police. A spokeswoman for Southern Water said, "We are aware of the situation regarding a number of horses fly grazing on our land. We thank everyone who has contacted us about this issue and would like to assure you that our priority is to ensure the safety and welfare of the horses." The RSPCA said a notice has been put up asking the owner of the horses to remove them within 7 working days. And there is a really upsetting photograph of this poor young dead horse, all wrapped up in police ribbon, which makes it look so much worse somehow. Sort of almost it's been tangled up and that's what killed it. But anyway, these things happen.
No change is not an option. No change to the National Health Service in Hampshire is not an option, a public meeting heard. Health chiefs told the meeting that the NHS must alter the way it cares for people at a time of spiralling demand and flatlining funding. The meeting heard of the growing need for the new emergency treatment centre between Winchester and Basingstoke. It would centralise the service for the most critically ill, 15% of patients, and replace the duplication of services at the North Hampshire Hospital and the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Andrew Bishop pictured, we have a picture of him inset, Wright, Interim Chief Executive of the Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust that operates the North Hampshire Hospital and the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, said it also made financial sense. "By centralising services, we save more money than we spend in building a new hospital. This is not investment, it's modernisation. It will cost less to build a new hospital than not to build a new hospital." Merton Rees, a hospital consultant for 30 years and interim chief medical officer, said it was becoming increasingly difficult to have staff 24/7 in two intensive care units at Basingstoke and Winchester. Plans had been due to be announced soon, but the meeting heard that another review of the proposals were being carried out and also considered the implications for Southampton. It is now due to report towards the end of the summer. "The Trust must also persuade the government to allow it to borrow the money," said Steve Bryan, Winchester MP, who organised the Ask the NHS meeting at the Ashburton Hall. The manager stressed that 85% of patients would continue to be cared at the two hospitals. "There is already much specialisation in services. People who suffer strokes in Basingstoke are taken to Winchester, and heart attack victims in Winchester are likely to be taken by ambulance to Basingstoke. The local NHS has produced a sustainability and transformation plan, STP, to tackle a likely reduction in funding and increasing demand." Richard Samuel, overseeing the STP in Hampshire, said they were looking at how GPs could provide more services. Extended hours, GP practices were working in Lymington and Gosport, and extending this to Winchester has been considered for this year. Staff shortages is a chronic problem, with 12,000 vacant posts across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, some 30%. Mr. Samuel said the workforce is already in short supply, and continuing to operate the way we do will continue to be challenging unless we find different ways of doing things. Mr. Bishop said the need to use agency staff was a ludicrously expensive way to run services. We spend $1 million a day to keep the hospital going. We are spending $1 million a month on agency staff at the end of last year. Half of that now against the budget of $360 million. Many GP surgery will become unsustainable because of the shortage, as many retire in the coming years. Steps are being taken to tackle the crucial fault line between hospitals and social care, which is seeing delayed discharges or bed blocking, costing the NHS billions of pounds a year. Mr. Samuel said he personally favoured a radical plan to increase efficiency. I think funding for the health sector should be routed through local government. It is not a view shared by many colleagues.
Fly tippers hit 999 call safety. Patients and ambulance staff were put at risk by rubbish being repeatedly dumped on a Winchester road. Ambulance staff at South Central Ambulance Service, NHS Foundation Trust, their patients and other members of the public were endangered early last Wednesday when Romsey Road, the main route to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, was blocked at several points with bins, rubbish containing glass and barriers. This careless and blatant disregard for the safety of staff, patients and other members of the public is totally unacceptable and has the potential to cause serious risk to life, the Trust said in a statement. On multiple occasions yesterday, ambulance staff had to stop and clear up the mess, only to have to stop and clear the path again later during the night. We would like to thank one member of the public who stopped to help our paramedic move the obstruction to the side of the road. Anyone who witnessed anyone acting suspiciously at this location overnight should contact Hampshire Police on 101. The motives for the dumping was unclear. One of the paramedics said on social media, "Dear people of Winchester, whoever it is that keeps doing this needs to bear in mind that emergency vehicles use these routes. This is the main road to the hospital, to travel to your families in the middle of the night. If we hit this, especially when there's glass in it, which there was, it could stop us reaching you. This was the second bin contents I came across emptied out across the road, with the bin itself also left tipped over on top. This is not the first time I have encountered this on a night shift, and it needs to stop, please. Lots of love, a very tired paramedic." And there is a photograph taken at night of the road, Romsey Road, Winchester, strewn across its entire width with rubbish.
Car crash death of mystery of mum. Mystery surrounds why a mother of three who died in a car crash had pulled over on a busy road. Nicola Price of Branksome Close, Stockbridge, died after a two-car collision on the A31 on January the 9th last year. A Mitsubishi Mirage was travelling west when it was in collision with Miss Price's Toyota MR2 that had stopped on the near side lane at around 3:20 p.m, Winchester Coroner's Court heard last Thursday. The 39-year-old mother of three was airlifted to Southampton General Hospital, but later died. The court heard how Miss Price stopped and put on her hazard lights on the dual carriageway, despite having recently passed a lay-by. Witness Karen McNichol said, "I drove past and thought it's an accident waiting to happen. I could not believe what I was seeing. I stopped my car and dialed 999. I was in shock. Susan McGregor, driving the Mitsubishi Mirage, said, "While I was at the hospital, all I kept thinking about was the other driver. I just remember the sun blinding me and that the car in front of me was not moving. It all just happened so quickly. I cannot stop thinking about the poor lady and her family." Pathologist Dr. Vipul Fauria said it was possible that there may have been an unidentified problem with electrical conduction through Ms. Price's heart, which caused her to have a medical episode. PC Kerr of Hampshire Police said there was no evidence of pre-collision mechanical defects on Ms. Price's car, but that she was wearing her seatbelt and had not been using her phone at the time of the incident. Ms. Price's car had not run out of fuel. Coroner Graham Short recorded a verdict of death by road traffic collision.
Home plans go on display. Residents had their chance to see plans for a retirement home on a former school site in Winchester. More than 50 people, including city and county councillors, viewed Renaissance Retirement's proposal to redevelop the King's School boarding house. The public consultation at Winchester Business School last Thursday showcased plans for over 55 living accommodation on Sarum Road. Renaissance secured control of the site following a tender process by the County Council. The early plans propose 29 two-bedroom flats in a single three-storey building with 42 parking spaces. Feedback will be taken into account before plans are submitted to the City Council. The application could be made by early February and work start in autumn of 2017. Simon McFarlane, Associated Planning Director at Renaissance, said, "We are very pleased with the feedback and comments from local people to our plans. We are aware of the housing need in the city and especially that which exists for accommodation for older people. Given the site's location, we are also very alive to the need to design a high-quality scheme which is right for Winchester and right for the character of the immediate area." There are four pictures. The largest one is of a group of people looking at the plans, varying ages, you know, young and old. And then the three below is designs on show and the artist's impression of the scheme. Looks rather nice. And a group of people, and these are older people, showing a keen interest at the designs.
Students' thanks to rescuers. A Sparsholt College student has thanked firefighters for saving her life. Lauren Woodward was playing her Xbox when fire broke out in the kitchen of her father's flat in Holbury. Firefighters from Hardley, Hythe and Bewley dealt with the fire on the 6th of January. At the time, Lauren's dad was out and she was completely unaware of the fire taking hold after it began in the oven. When she heard the alarm, the flames had already taken hold and she rang Hampshire Fire and Rescue, who arrived within 10 minutes. As the kitchen is the main access point to the flat, she had no other means of escape. But firefighters whisked her out of the property via a ladder and she was taken to hospital where she was treated for smoke inhalation. Lauren, who studies animal management and also works as a cleaner, said, "I was in the living room playing Xbox. I heard the fire alarm go off and I went round to see what was going on and I saw lots of black smoke and flames. I probably would have died if it wasn't for them and if the smoke alarm wasn't working. And as I did not hear or smell it when it had got bad, I would have died." Currently, she doesn't know if she can go back to the home where she lives.
Cathedral opens doors. Special evening offers unique insight into building and its history. There's the chance for the public to go behind the scenes at one of Hampshire's iconic buildings. Winchester Cathedral is opening its ancient doors at an open evening on Tuesday, January the 31st. The public often go to the Great Church, many to regularly worship, while others attend the Remembrance Service, Harvest Festivals, Carol Services or Ice Rink and Christmas Market. The open evening gives the public a chance to see how the cathedral operates and the work that is needed to maintain and preserve the structure that is nearly 1,000 years old. Also, there is the rare opportunity to see the nave as the builders intended, with no modern chairs and an atmospheric evening candlelight. The event starts with Evensong, sung by the Cathedral Choir at 5:30 p.m., and activities and displays run from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. The boy choristers will give a short recital at 7:30 p.m. Entry is free. Among the things to see are displays about the conservation of the 12th century Winchester Bible. The cathedral's curator will be on hand with images and explanations about the work. Jane Austen is one of the cathedral's most famous residents, and there is a permanent exhibition near where she is buried, which tells of her life, particularly poignant in the 200th anniversary year of her death. There are also activities for children, displays from the Friends of the Cathedral, music department, the head gardener, and other groups within the organisation who make this great church tick. For those who cannot go along on the night, the chairs will remain out of the nave until February the 2nd. Full list of activities. 5:30 p.m. choral evensong sung by the boy choristers and lay clerks. Tours to the bell chamber. Guided tours around the cathedral. Children's activities. Meet the Jane Austen guides and Jane Austen story. Meet the stonemasons, carpenters and gardeners. Find out about our Heritage Lottery Fund work. Meet the music department and wardrobe team. Meet our vergers and watch them demonstrate the art of candle carving. Meet the broderers and see their work. See the flower rangers in action. Watch the holy dusters and brass band. Meet the curator and find out about the Winchester Bible and other cathedral treasures. Have a go at calligraphy. Find out about volunteering and how to get involved. 7:30 p.m. short concert by the boy choristers. And then there's a fact file. The cathedral was built as a symbol of power shortly after the Normans conquered England in 1066. It is the second longest cathedral in Europe. Only St. Peter's in Rome is longer. The Norman and Gothic church was built on marshland and nearly collapsed until saved in the early 20th century by William Walker. Saxon kings are buried there, as is Jane Austen. It is soon to welcome its first female dean when the very Reverend Catherine Ogle takes over next month from James Atwell. And there are a couple of beautiful pictures of the cathedral looking at its best, and one of the mortuary chests in the Lady Chapel, which I've never seen, but look absolutely extraordinary, whether they quite what they contain, but they're beautifully decorated, long chests with sort of curved tops to them. I think the whole thing would be well worth a visit, and that's going to be on Tuesday, January the 31st.
Nominations now open. Excuse me. The Premier Business Awards in Winchester District are open for nominations following a glitzy launch party. The launch of the 2017 Winchester Business Excellence Awards, now in its 15th year, took place at the Cathedral's Wessex Centre. The prestigious awards, sponsored by Denplan for the fifth year running, celebrated businesses in Winchester, including both established firms and the growing businesses. Excuse me. The event is organised by the Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, and the Hampshire Chronicle. The awards on offer in 2017 are Business of the Year, Green Business of the Year, Independent Business of the Year, Excellence in Innovation Award, Small Medium Enterprise Award, and the Service Excellence Award. There are also two new awards for Charity or Social Enterprise of the Year Award and Sparshot Supporting Apprenticeships Award. The event featured Anchor Pipework, who won the Small Medium Enterprise Award in 2016 and then scooped the Overall Business of the Year Award. The guests were welcomed to the awards by Winchester BID's Catherine Turness, who handed over the Winchester Cathedral's Annabel Boys. Miss Boys thanked Hampshire County Council for their work and with the cathedral to create the newly designed Wessex Centre and launch venue. She added, "Winchester Cathedral was very proud to win one of the community awards a few years ago. Good luck to everybody." Helena Bissett from Anchor Pipework, was then invited to the stage. Miss Bissett said, "Winning two awards last year tipped the balance in our favour." She said, "We entered our business into the awards because we believe passionately in the service we offer." She added that the recognition from the awards made them stand out in a highly competitive market. The Black Tie Awards ceremony, which includes drinks followed by a three-course meal, will take place in Winchester Guildhall on June the 2nd. The awards are now open for nominations. And there are four pictures. The first one is with the title Winchester Business Excellence Award 2017, with a group of people listening to, I presume, it's Ms. Boyce talking. And then below there's pictures of Kaylee Fagents and Vicky Turner, and another of Kerry Darwin and Joe Richardson. And finally, three gentlemen, John Cornell, Peter Taylor, Ian Murray and Travis Allen.
UKIP councillor quits. A UKIP councillor has resigned from Hampshire County Council. Councillor Ray Finch, who is also an MEP for the South East, said that he wasn't able to carry out his role as a councillor for the Bedhampton and Lee Park ward. He explained this was due to him carrying out his duties as an MEP, which caused him to miss two full council meetings in the last 6 months. Councillor Finch was elected as an MEP in 2014 and previously served as the UKIP group leader on Hampshire County Council. Earlier this month, he became head of the UK Europe of Freedom and Direct Democracy delegation in the European Parliament. Councillor Finch said in a statement, "This morning, I have written to the chairman and chief executives of Hampshire County Council, tendering my resignation from my role as the councillor for the Bedhampton and Lee Park division. I am, of course, sad that I have to do this so close to the new elections for the county coming in May. However, due to missing the two full council meetings that took place in the last 6 months, both due to carrying out my duties as an MEP for the South East, one a visit to Auschwitz and the other a voting session in the European Parliament, I am unable to continue my joint mandate. Happily, the chief executive has confirmed that as my resignation comes so close to the full elections, there will be no need to cost the taxpayer the expense of a by-election. However, as that is the case, I will continue working, as I have done for local residents until the election itself, dealing with constituency issues and working on their behalf as normal, just not taking allowances nor attending council meetings. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the people of Bedhampton and Lee Park for their goodwill and trust over the past years, and also my colleagues in the UKIP group on the council and the staff and officers of the council for all their assistance over my term of office."
Peddler Impact Wrangle. Fears have been expressed about peddlers in Winchester obstructing shoppers. City Councillor Ian Tate said that over Christmas, a peddler positioned himself in a pinch point in the High Street, blocking pedestrians. Market traders have also said they are worried about the impact of peddlers. In a question at Council last Wednesday, Councillor Tate said, "Does the leader share my concerns that whilst the High Street market was reconfigured to avoid the pinch point in front of Laura Ashley, the benefits were then negated by a peddler positioning himself virtually permanently in that position, causing significant disruption to the movement of pedestrians through this critical route to the High Street and Cathedral during the Christmas period? What measures, if any, are being considered to avoid this situation occurring this year?" Council leader Stephen Godfrey said it was a police issue and that the Peddlers Act of 1871 stipulates they should not remain in a single place other than when conducting a sale. Councillor Godfrey answered, "I do share the councillor's concerns, and where such a peddler is found to be causing a disruption, they should be moved on accordingly."
Scouts receive refurb funding boost. A Winchester scout group is celebrating after being handed a cheque worth thousands of pounds. The 5th Winchester Scouts were given the £5,000 by Compton and Shawford Parish Council. The money was grant-funded from the Construction Infrastructure Levy, CIL, to assist with the cost of refurbishing the Reeve Scout Hall. Naomi Sadler, Beaver Scout leader at the 5th Winchester Scouts, was delighted with the news. She says, "It is for a new kitchen and upgrading the facilities, and the biggest thing for us is the new kitchen because the shelves were knackered. I'm really pleased it has taken... Sorry, I'll read that again. I'm really pleased it has taken quite a long time of applying for the whole process. It's such a large amount of money for us to raise funds. If we did not have the money, it's really hard work. And in Compton and Shawford, we do not have a great deal of people to help things, and the money is very much appreciated."
Pricey parking at Airport Station. Southampton Airport Parkway car park is the second most expensive in the country. It is charging £15 per day, and according to Complaint Service Resolver, that figure is only topped by Reading. In a survey across 100 commuter towns and cities across the country, Southampton's car park was found to be the second highest, ahead of Guildford, £14.50, Brighton, £13.10, and Ebbsfleet, £12.60, for a daily service. The figures also indicate that rail fares in Britain increased by an average 2.3% on 2nd of January. Founder of Resolver, James Walker, said, "With price increases on the horizon on everything from household goods to mortgages, people are really concerned about making ends meet during 2017. Though train and parking companies can't be forced to reduce their prices, you can still recoup some of your losses by remembering your rights and claiming for refunds if you're delayed or complaining if you face an unfair parking charge."
Service seeks to resolve disputes. Could you be a mediator? Are you mature, confident and comfortable, visiting all kinds of people in their homes, gaining their trust, drawing them out and listening to their problems without taking sides or telling them what to do? If so, then Winchester Mediation Service is looking to replace two mediators who have recently moved out of the area. The service specialises in helping to resolve neighbour disputes, which can arise over problems such as noise, parking, fences, trees, boundaries, pets, antisocial behaviour, etc. Mediation work is voluntary, although expenses are paid, and you can do it at any time of day that suits both you and the neighbours. You never mediate alone, but always have with another experienced volunteer. Full training to a nationally approved standard is provided free. If you think you might be make a good neighbour mediator, why not call the Winchester Mediation Service on 01962 813 320 to discuss it in more detail. It's 01962 813 320.
Pensioner rescued from ditch. Fire crews were called out to rescue an elderly man trapped in a 6-foot ditch. The 68-year-old was walking at Hill Pounds, Swanmore, just before 2 p.m. last Tuesday when he fell into the ditch on a building site. Firefighters from Fareham, Cosham and Basingstoke were called to the rescue scene. The incident occurred on a David Wilson Homes housing development. Managing Director of David Wilson Homes, Tim Hill, said, "We can confirm there was an incident on the site today involving a ground worker who works for one of our subcontractors. We will be liaising closely with the HSC and emergency services regarding this incident, and an internal investigation is underway to establish in more detail what occurred. The man is not thought to have been seriously hurt."
Old certificates. Kingscore calling. The Winchester Secondary School wants to hear from ex-pupils who left in such a hurry that they never picked up their exam certificates. Nikki Harris, exams coordinator at King's, is looking to reunite over 400 exam certificates with their owners. Anyone who was at Denmark School between 1967 and 1984 who thinks they may not have collected their certificates can contact Nikki on 01962 861 161. That's 01962 861 161. Please state the year that you left and your name at the time of being at Denmark. One of the schools that with Montgomery of El Alamein was combined to create King's. The school also has old certificates left here by King's pupils between 1991 and 2015.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.